All right, paper 35, section 8, which is old single column, page 392. Okay, so we've done the Melchizedek's, we've done the Verondedex's. Now we have next in line, of course, coming down in. You know, basically coming down, kind of quote unquote coming down, but definitely now it's coming down. The third in order is Linnonidex. And before we start reading, let's just do like we did previously. Let's think about that name. You know, that's certainly not something you can look up in the dictionary. At least Melchizedek, you can, you know, you got something there to start with. But Linnonidex is just like Verondedex. They've So again, they've taken this quasi suffix, you know, it's a sort of more of a word ending, and turned it into a suffix, this D-E-K sequence of letters, and they're going to use that again to indicate an expression. And in this case, we're talking about the expression of local universe descending suns. So what kind of an expression do we have? You've got some concept, and they've stuck deck on it to say that that concept's getting expressed. Okay, and this one, again, you're going back to the root languages of English, and a little bit different here in that you have a verb that is no longer used in modern English, but it's part of the evolutionary roots. There's a verb, L-I-N, an obsolete verb, lin, and it means to cease, or to discontinue. Okay, and lan is the past tense of lin. So in that spirit, see, if to cease, to discontinue, you could say no longer. Okay, the just like before, the on is akin to or like, and the an in Lenon an, the an is just one, one. Those articles, an and short a, indicate one. So you have no longer one-like expression. Okay, is the literal meaning of that coined word that they that they've given us here, to as we've been saying, to serve as a constant touchstone of the truth of what they are. In sort of the pithiest terms. So just as with the Verondedex, so you have it here with the Linnonidex, that they want you to have this sort of constant reminder of what the basic nature of the being is, so that as you're reading about them or getting into the exploits, we know we certainly have a lot of exploits with Linnonidex. You can remind yourself, that's fundamentally why that's happening. So, one-like, that indivisibility of oneness. Now, as we're expressing down, and when we said, in many ways the Melchizedek's and the Verondedex are kind of at the same level, just two different flavors. But now you're definitively coming down, and that innate integrity in Melchizedek and Verondedex is no longer innate. The Linnonidex are created specifically downstepped from that, less unity-like, more individuality-like, because they need to be able to naturally engage down at a lower level where there's fundamentally more individuality. they're going to come all the way down and serve as planetary princes. They need to have a definitive natural sense of that relationship to the individuation of things as opposed to the unity of things. But that comes at a price. When you're expressing these suns, obviously none of us know the physics of this, but we can see what happened. It's obviously the case as you, it's a zero sum game sort of as you're going down. If you're going to have less unity, if you're going to have more individuality, you're going to have less unity. So it's kind of a teeter totter here. It's a seesaw thing where you're shifting from one to the other as you're going down. Okay, so as you start to read, if you have that in mind, that no longer one like, then so many things they say are just sort of just straightforwardly, obviously, a restatement of that simple fact. Okay. So let's jump in and see what we've got here.
Section 8, the Lanaundek Sons. After the creation of the Varanadex, the Creator Sun and the Universe Mother Spirit unite for the purpose of bringing into existence the third order of universe sonship, the Lanaundek. Although occupied with various tasks connected with the system administrations, they are best known as system sovereigns, the rulers of local systems, and as planetary princes, the administrative heads of the inhabited worlds. Being a later and lower, as concerns divinity levels, order of sonship creation, these beings were required to pass through certain courses of training on the Melchizedek worlds in preparation for subsequent service. They were the first students in the Melchizedek University and were classified and certified by their Melchizedek teachers and examiners according to ability, personality, and attainment.
Okay, so, again, just another way of saying what I was just saying. They're lower as concerns divinity levels. So divinity means deity likeness. The fundamental quality of deity is unity. I see, so they're lower in relationship to unity, i.e., they're more individuality identified. Okay. And because of that, because they aren't as inherently all on the correct page to begin with, you might say, they have to go to the Melchizedek University. So we were just reading about that, and you might have wondered, I wonder who are the first students? Well, see, here it is. Right back at the very beginning of everything, before you had any inhabited worlds or whatnot, obviously you can't have inhabited worlds if you don't have a local system headquarters populated and, to oversee those, and, you don't have the Lanaundek trained yet, so they're first. So just remind, you notice they were, when they said that training on the Melchizedek worlds, okay, now technically we're training them on Melchizedek, on the pilot sphere, the primary, the first of the seven Melchizedek worlds, and it's those two colleges that they talked about, that are really specifically what the training they need or where they get the education that they need. So let's just remind ourselves what those were. I mean, that was back in the latter part of section 3. They said that there were schools of universe administration and spiritual wisdom on the Melchizedek homeworld. So with that spiritual wisdom, that was the Melchizedek College of Spiritual Endowment. And the Universe Administration, that was the College of High Ethics. Okay, now, so obviously they're going to be administrators, and so, that's pretty straightforward, that whole issue of Universe Administration. So they got that, that education in the College of High Ethics there on Melchizedek. And then just, you know, remind you again, what I emphasized back when we read that, you know, the problematic aspect of that education in spiritual wisdom, you know, in that College of Spiritual Endowment, where these evangels of destiny, in other words, you know, evangel is literally well messenger, in other words, messenger of good news. You know, these beings that are going to go out to give the ascending mortals and the lower beings the good news about the you know, the light and life destiny that we're all working towards. And so, you know, you should set in for the long haul and work through all of the difficulties of an evolutionary domain. Because there's this definitive destiny, and so it's their job to really, you know, make sure that's held high all the time, so people don't get disheartened by slogging through all the mess, you know, that they're going to have to for billions and billions and billions of years. But that whole bit about proclaiming spiritual liberty and divine sonship, and the rub, you know, comes in how you. You know, initially respond to those concepts. If you don't have the objectivity to distinguish between true and false liberty, getting educated about the fact of spiritual liberty is going to be problematic. A little knowledge is dangerous. Same way with divine sonship. You know, in the case of the Lanonadex, as long as they keep one eye firmly fixed on their superiors, their sonship ministry will be quote-unquote divine. But they're not innately that way. But if you didn't quite, you know, have that message sink in, you know, it starts to slowly build like it did for Lucifer and others. That, oh, I think I'm innately divine. I remember I was educated in divine sonship. You know, and he forgot the asterisk that was next to that. Right? So, you know, it's that education. It's not the universe administration stuff. He was, you know, totally fine on that, as we'll see here in a little bit. There's direct evidence of how, you know, how well he did in getting that square in his head, the administration part. But it's that issue of the dynamics of spirit. Energy, your relationship to spirit. It's not your relationship to individuality and the facts. It's that relationship to unity, to the spiritual, that is where the problem lies. Okay, so now we kind of, you know, we've got the full picture. That they were, so they were the first ones, and so then the Melchizedeks give them, you know, a final exam, quote unquote, of some sort. And sort them into bins. Okay, and they all very definitively sort out like this, as we're about to read. And now, but I wanted to just comment here. See, so the Melchizedek teachers and examiners sort them according to ability, personality, and attainment. Okay, so you know, ability and attainment. You know, that's pretty straightforward. It's kind of nature nurture sort of. You know, experiential elements. And just make sure you don't, you know, this is another example. Remind yourself when they say personality, you know, assess the context. You know, they're not talking about just merely that existential influence, you know, or functioning. That is personality, literally just existentially, as it's, you know, being handed out by the Universal Father. Because, in, you know, there aren't categories of those personalities, just innately in and of themselves. The only categories of first source personalities, there's two categories, creator personality and creature personality. And that's it for categories. You know, those personalities are absolutely unique. You know, with that one little caveat about whether it's a creator or creature personality. So, you know, for them to say that personality, they don't mean that if you just looked existentially at all these personalities somehow, you know, abstractly, you know, you could see, oh, here's the primary Lennonidec ones, you know, that are in the Father's hand, and here's, you know, they're talking about when personalities engage a self, so that you get a personalized self. Then there gets to be some categories, some types, some flavors. Okay, so, you know, it's in that sense. One reason to emphasize that in your mind is you don't want to put much in the way of qualification on any personality, because it has to be able to take that being all the way to co-absolute relationship with the infinite all are. If it starts out in some little bin, see, it's not going to be able to come into relationship with the all are. And so, existentially, it's not so qualified. You know. Okay, so just wanted to use this opportunity to stress that. And just always ask yourself, when they say personality, do they technically mean personalized self, or do they literally mean just merely existential personality? You know, a pure potential fact. You know, no actualization, no identification with the self. Okay, so let's see what happened to him here.
The universe of Nebadon began its existence with exactly 12 million Lennonidecs, and when they had passed through the Melchizedek sphere, they were divided in the final tests into three classes.
Okay, just one little thing before we do the classes, because we've been tracking this. So they've given us the numbers for all three of them now, the Melchizedek, the Aaronidec, Lennonidec. The thing, you know, that you notice first, before you try to deal with the specific numbers, you know, like why 12 million, you know, maybe, exactly 12 million. There was an exact round number of Aaronidec and an exact round number of Lennonidec. But there wasn't such an exact round number of Melchizedek. They just, you know, there's upwards of you know, something over 10 million. Okay, so here you see that with both of the Lennonidec and the Lennonidec, you have some very definitive, you know, round number pattern thing where, you know, they're made for a certain specific sort of completely predetermined task, as it were. But personality is a wild card. You can't calculate that in advance. So how is that taken into account regarding these sons? There's some fudge factor in the Melchizedek. Now obviously there's going to be some high wisdom in the creator son and creator mother spirit that determines just how big a fudge factor they need. How much more than that, you know, round number. But they are the cleanup team. You know, if there's any issues with the Lennonidec, someone has to take up that slack of that emergency, like we read. That's you know, just an immediate thing that you can appreciate about why there isn't an exact number, round number, of Melchizedek. Okay. Now, in terms of how many you're going to need, you know, as we'll see in a second, but you can just, it's like, well, I know that I need one for planetary prince for every inhabited sphere, and there's somewhere around 10 million when all is said and done. So it's going to have to be some number in the ballpark of 10 million, and you know, you see it's 12 million. So you know, you basically know why it's not like 1 million like it was with the Aaronidec. All right.
One, primary Lennonidec. Of the highest rank, there were 709,841. These are the sons designated as system sovereigns and assistants to the Supreme Council of the Constellations and as counselors in the higher administrative work of the universe. Two, secondary Lennonidec. Of this order, emerging from Melchizedek, there were 10,234,601. They are assigned as planetary princes and to the reserves of that order.
Okay, just see, notice right there, see, emerging from, not Melchizedek University, emerging from Melchizedek, you know, those colleges that are just on that one world. See.
Three, tertiary Lenon Index. This group contained 1,055,558. These sons function as subordinate assistants, messengers, custodians, commissioners, observers, and prosecute the miscellaneous duties of a system and its component worlds.
Okay, the one little thing there, let's just notice some a loose end and an intriguing suggestion that's buried in there. Okay, I've mentioned this as we've been going through. They told us before they started talking about these sons that there's need for ambassadors, consuls, and they called them observers. Okay, here's the observers. So remember, ambassadors go from one local universe to another, represent one local universe, you know, to another. Consuls represent one constellation to another, or a constellation up to the local universe headquarters. And an observer represents one system to another, or represents that system up to the constellation headquarters. Okay, so, you know, you could be, you know, they told you that a long time ago, and you could be looking, you know, waiting for the word observer to come up. It's like, I wonder who those observers are. It's like, okay, see, here they are. The tertiary Lenon Index are the ones that are going to do that job of representing the system, you know, sideways or vertically. Okay, the other intriguing thing there is subordinate assistants. When you get to the Lucifer Rebellion, because that impacted us, they, you know, mention Caligastian crew in that context, and they mention that Caligastia and Daligastia, who were both secondary Lenon Index, they mentioned that that those two had a chief of staff. Okay, and they take the human name Abaddon to use for that individual, just like they've taken Lucifer and Satan and, you know, and whatnot. They apply that name Abaddon to that particular individual. Abaddon, Abaddon, like in the Bible, and they say that he wasn't, continues to be chief of the rebels.
He
was and continues to be the chief of the rebels on the world. You know, okay, well, wait a minute. I mean, at the planetary adjudication at Pentecost, we know that all the rebel angels, you know, and the rebel midwives too, were taken off. And, you know, and they tell us about how, you know, basically the staff of a planetary prince are seraphim. You know, well, wait a minute. I mean, how could he be continuing to be? That means he wasn't a seraphim, this chief of staff. So what kind of a being was he then? Very likely he's a tertiary Lenon Index, serving as a subordinate assistant, you know, in contrast to Daligastia, who's an associate assistant to Caligastia. So that would be my guess, you know, is who Abaddon is. He's a tertiary Lenon Index.
What does it say about him in the Bible?
Well, it's just, you know, in the context of the book of Revelation, you know, and those sorts of doings. Yeah. So it's a name that's, you know, in play. You know, and I mean, or in Greek, that's Hebrew. In Greek, it's Apollyon. So you'll see both names, the Greek and the Hebrew. Okay? But Yeah. So if you, yeah, if you know anything about, you know, if you're, especially if you, you know, raised in an environment where there was lots of talking about Daniel and the 24th chapter of Matthew and the book of Revelation, there was lots of stuff about the end of days, you know, in your upbringing, you know, you certainly would have, you know, run across those names. And so that, you know, they pick that Mr. Destruction as the name for this most likely tertiary Lenonadec chief of staff of Caligastia. Okay. Let's see. Was there anything else there? We'll see it when we get down here. But let me just stress it. Notice with the secondary Lenonadecs, unlike the other two, you don't have kind of, and they also do kind of vague stuff. notice it's very precise. You know, those secondary Lenonadecs, they are assigned as planetary princes and to the reserves of that order. See, period. So no, counselors, you know, or assist, you know, or whatnot. Okay. So they seem to be a very, kind of very precisely defined group. You know, and not surprisingly, like we said, we're not surprised that it's a number on the order of 10 million for them. See, you know, they're the core here of the phenomenon. And then there's you know, so they're sort of the center of the bell curve. See, and then there's a tail on each side. The primaries, you know, on the higher side, and the tertiaries on the lower side of the bell curve. You know, but they're the meat, the primary expression, and so they don't have, you know, they don't serve as messengers or, you know, or whatnot. Okay.
It is not possible, as it is with evolutionary beings, for these sons to progress from one group to another. When subjected to the Melchizedek training, when once tested and classified, they serve continuously in the rank assigned. Neither do these sons engage in reproduction. Their number in the universe is stationary.
That, this came up before. You know, see, so there it is, just being stated again. They're experiential beings. I mean, you know, they acquire experience. They, you know, they mature. They get better with age. There isn't a lot of very definitive verticalness to this. In the seraphim, you know, you see them, you know, they'll move way up through vertical ranks, you know, and can literally become ascending, you know, beings. Okay, so, you know, they have a high degree of vertical potential built into them. Lenonadecs, no. They're, you know, relatively horizontal sorts of beings, you know, who were acquiring greater completeness and the integrity that comes with that with time. But they're not really, you know, moving vertically. Okay?
In round numbers, the Lenonadec order of sons, is classified on Salvington as follows. Universe coordinators and constellation counselors, 100,000. System sovereigns and assistants, 600,000. Planetary princes and reserves, 10 million. Messenger corps, 400,000. Custodians and recorders, 100,000. Reserve corps, 800,000.
Okay, so you can see, you can really see kind of what I've been hinting at. Since we have in the background, you know, in just in rough terms, the 10 million number. They just put it in that context, rounded things. And, you know, if you look up, you actually have 10,234,601. So, they've thrown the change, you know, basically in with the Reserve Corps, their batch of tertiary Lenonadecs, just for the sake of this simple illustration, so that you can just roughly see that, okay, I need 10 million, quote unquote, for the world, for planetary princes. And then how do the other ones, you know, divide out? if you take 2 million out of that 800,000, you have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So you have the 1.1 million roughly tertiary Lennon index there. Okay, see, so that's how you're dividing it. And then you see, you know, you have roughly 700,000 primaries, and they've just split it 600, 100. Okay, but it gives you a little sense of what's going on here. So with the primaries, you know, it is definitely the primary thing that the primaries are up to is the local system administration directly issue, the system sovereigns and assistants. That's 600,000 out of the 7. Okay, and then then you just have 100 for the doing those other jobs. When you look at the tertiary, you can see that the messenger corps issue is the dominant element there, aside from the reserve corps. But in terms of specific, that's the main thing that they're up to, is being the mobile element for these three, for the primaries, secondaries, and tertiaries. One of them needs to be a little bit more mobile than the other two are apparently, normally allowed to be because of their duties as system sovereigns, planetary princes, and associated things. Okay, see, so it's trying to give you a little sense of how the labor is divided and why there's three groups. All right. And you notice that the custodians and recorders are kind of like the universe coordinators and constellation counselors. There's 100,000 of each. So those are roughly equivalent numerical jobs.
Yep. What do you think they went to so much detail?
I'm just kind of getting the juices flowing by throwing out these initial thoughts. I mean, that's what they want you to do. They want you to have sort of the histogram a little bit, in mind here of how they break up into, sub bins, so that you get a little feel for, what are the requirements in a universe. Do you need, 20 million custodians and recorders? No. Just 100,000, considering, consider the task at hand here, okay? It's a big local universe. It's trying to help you to recognize, and that's why I was emphasizing, what's primary is the big, what are the big ones, so that you can get a sense of, there's a very definitive need for the tertiaries to be a messenger corps. There's lots of personal message sending and receiving that has to go on. You can't do it over the circuits. You have to send an actual personal messenger from point A to point B. So you've got to have a whole bunch of them scurrying about all the time.
And they have to be in Seraphim.
Yep. And they have to be in Seraphim. Right. So it's three times the speed of light. And we'll see that. So there's logistics issues, and you can... You know that right up front, because three times the speed of light is not that fast, relative to the size of a local universe. So they've got to have people pre-positioned, obviously, if this is going to work logistically. So that's all being managed all the time, anticipating needs and shuffling reserves around. It's like, that constellation that's up their reserves 2%, because I'm thinking, a million years from now there's going to be, some need or whatever. Especially the Verondadex, who are very far-seeing, like we were reading, because they're very father-like. There's that far-seeing ability is going to come in handy for the logistics here, getting them pre-located.
Okay.
Yep.
So the reserve corps, the 800,000, up here it's on the secondary, says that to the reserves of that order. So the rest of them would be, the rest of the reserve corps would be?
Tertiary, 600,000 of them basically, see, our tertiary Lennon index. And about.
So where does it say that? Doesn't say the reserve corps on the tertiary.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, for the, you notice it says planetary princes and reserves You know, 10 million? Okay, remember, there's technically, like I pointed out, planetary princes in the reserves, all of those 10,234,601 are all planetary princes in reserves. But they're just, you know, they're rounding off. So they've got to round that to 10 million. Okay, and so they slop those 200,000 into the tertiary reserve corps, that 800. 200 of that 800 are actually secondaries.
Well, my question is, can the reserve corps do any of these, help any of these orders?
Well, okay, look at you know, forget about the reserves of the secondaries, but just those 600,000 roughly reserves of the tertiaries. You know, look at the list they gave you. They said subordinate assistants, messengers, custodians, commissioners, observers, you know, and then miscellaneous. Okay. Well, they said that messengers, that's a specific group. Custodians and recorders, that's a specific group. Okay, so those reserves are going to have to be doled out for subordinate assistants, like a Baden, probably. Those reserves are going to have to serve as commissioners. They're going to have to serve as observers. And then all the other miscellaneous things. Yeah, see? And you know, that even beyond, you know, that you know, that literalness of the quote unquote observers, you know, from one system to another or up to the constellation like I was talking about. Remember how they mentioned you've got, you know, this whole intelligence thing going on where, you know, you have the administrators in the local universe are getting information about what's going on in various places outside of the broadcast circuits. You know, they have a secret information source. They have spies. They have eyes everywhere. You know, so you know, if you've got an integrous system sovereign, you know, he's keeping eyes on everything that's going on, you know. So he's got people going around, you know, and bringing back information to him all the time, you know, that's outside of the circuits, you know. So no one can read it on Facebook, you know. And we commented about that, you know. It's that sort of behind the scenes information source, you know. When Lucifer, you know, is beginning to drift offline, and others, I mean, you know, that they don't put that out on the circuits, yeah. But they, you know, they're informed. Now, of course, there's some people that don't need to be informed. I mean, they just know. But you know, for those that can't just, you know, somehow acquire this by their, you know, ubiquitous consciousness, then, you know, they need to be informed. All right, you know, and there's just so many, you know, there's, you know, more beings not revealed than revealed, you know, always keep that in mind. So, you know, we have no idea how much there might be need for those sorts of things for all kinds of reasons that we have not the slightest clue about. It has to do with the other six schemes besides the ascension scheme. So, yeah. All right.
Since Lananandex are a somewhat lower order of sonship than the Melchizedex and the Verandadex, they are of even greater service in the subordinate units of the universe, for they are capable of drawing nearer the lower creatures of the intelligent races. They also stand in greater danger of going astray, of departing from the acceptable technique of universe government. But these Lananandex, especially the primary order, are the most able and versatile of all local universe administrators. In executive ability, they are excelled only by Gabriel and his unrevealed associates.
See, like I said before, there they are again. They keep reminding us of those unrevealed associates. It's so frequent that it's very suspicious that they're wanting you sometime in the future when you start unpacking this book more to not forget about them, because apparently, in my suspicion is, you're going to go, wait a minute, there needs to be a group of beings that fit this part of, that's Gabriel's sidekicks. You know, you probably can deduce where they fit into the picture. Otherwise, it seems really excessive to, you know, repeat it every single time they have a chance that Gabriel has these unrevealed sidekicks. Now, here they're talking about it directly. That whole bit about being able to go down to the more individuality level of things. And remind you again, local universe, three levels. Local universe, capital level, unity level, constellation level, associativity level, local system, individuality level. So system sovereigns, planetary princes, it's all about that individuality level. They have to be, if you think of some sort of a unity-like source being downstepped, as it comes down, it splits into fingers. You not only have each individual being able to relate directly to individuality more innately, but you get this all these categories. See, too. I mean, just in their overall expression, they're more individuality-like. They aren't just these kind of beings. They're those and those and those and those and those and those. It's just fundamentally more individuality-like in their expression. Maybe one thing to notice there is the acceptable technique. It's kind of an interesting way to express it. Not the ordained technique maybe or something, but they're trying to remind you that there's free will. And the point of the universe is not to have it be a police state. You have genuine free will, beings high and low. Can you recognize the wisdom of the acceptable technique? They're not going to force it on you. But you won't be accepted as part of the cosmic whole if you don't recognize the acceptable technique. Yeah, right? Yeah. There's a best way. And in some cases, that best way, that's not a very generalized, do something within this sphere. It might be very, very precise. There's just only one way to do it, and it's your job to develop the cosmic perspective to recognize that best way yourself, independent of anyone telling you. No established authority. Pop, what should I do? You have to see it all by yourself. That's our goal in the universe, to be such a being. A being that doesn't need to be told anything. A being that knows innately. But we didn't start that way, by and large, a Verdonadec or a Melchizedek. We start with almost no innate recognition. But everything has to be innate when all is said and done. You don't do anything in the absoluteness of the Isle of Paradise because Bob told you to do it. It has to be absolutely you. All right, thinking the truth. 100% you doing that. Right. Yeah. All right. I think that's all we need there. They are the most able and versatile. So, just reminding you that, yes, they're lower as concerns divinity levels, as they said parenthetically up there, but don't forget they're superior, in this administrative ability, this ability to administer to all kinds of complex individuality, because they can wrap their mind around all those details. They don't just gloss over it with a unity consciousness. Yeah. All right.
Nine, the Lenonendek rulers. The Lanaanadex are the continuous rulers of the planets and the rotating sovereigns of the systems. Such a sun now rules on Jerusalem, the headquarters of your local system of inhabited worlds. The system sovereigns rule in commissions of two or three on the headquarters of each system of inhabited worlds. The constellation Father names one of these Lanaanadex as chief every decamillennium. Sometimes no change in the head of the trio is made, the matter being entirely optional with the constellation rulers. Since no governments do not suddenly change in personnel unless a tragedy of some sort. System governments do not suddenly change in personnel unless a tragedy of some sort occurs.
Okay. So they start out with that little thing. So see, there are two different modes that they operate in. You have continuous rulers of the planets. And as you may remember, a planetary prince goes and he's there for the duration. He's going to go all the way through until he's planetary sovereign, ad infinitum, I should say, quote unquote, at least until the end of this age, in a finite age. Okay, but the system sovereigns, are rotated. Okay, and then they give you some specifics. Okay, that it's that it can be as frequently as every standard, decamillennium, 10,000 years, which is 50,000 years, remember, in Urantia time. Okay, so they can be rotated as frequently as every 50,000 of our years. Again, if you go to the Lucifer Rebellion paper, they give you another little bit of information. They tell you that at the time of the rebellion, so 200,000 years ago, that Lucifer had been serving for over 500,000 years. Okay, and that Satan had never served as system sovereign. Okay, see, so now put the pieces together. So Lucifer was on his 11th term. He had been reinstated by the constellation fathers 10 times. Okay, so, they wouldn't have reinstated him if he was off in La La Land, very early on. He had been reinstated 10 times. So it was somewhere in that 11th term that things went astray. Remember, they said it was, it was something like 500 years that people had noticed, those on high had noticed straying off. Okay. Yep.
Well, a couple questions.
Yep. Right, so, you see that in our case we had, it said two or three, see, so we had a two.
Well, what immediately comes to my mind is perhaps Satan was one of the weak link. Why was he never made the system sovereign as a rotation?
Right. See, you obviously, that's why I'm bringing this up. See, it opens up this whole domain of speculation about this. So, what was the deal? I mean, you could certainly suspect just that, or was Satan, there's no issue with Satan, but Lucifer was just so exemplary that they wanted to keep him, in charge. Yeah, which was it? Or things I probably can't even imagine. But that's why I'm putting those two pieces together. See, so you can see that there's a complexity here that's kind of curious. Why was there no rotation going on? over and over and over again, the Constellation Father was reinstating Lucifer. You know, and like I said, I mean, it reminds you, they point out he was a very brilliant Lenonidec. You know, where the Constellation Father said, you know, I want this to run, you know, a long time. I want him to have a full chance to, you know, because he's sort of on the edges of the norm Lenonidec, and he's very brilliant. You know, and he's staying between the lines. The potential here, if he stays, you know, and you know, has this very long-term influence, this could lead to really significant things. Maybe they were thinking that. See, you can rationalize it different ways. I mean, I can't say for certain. But anyway, you know, this is a very fascinating little tidbit. And you know, and then it's in the context of this that you, oh, that's why they mentioned that about Satan. You know, it's a curious little kind of parenthetical passing comment that they say that Satan had never served as system sovereign, you know, when you're reading through there.
And so sometimes
see?
No change.
Yeah, yeah. See, and so
it's
not unusual, and it was definitely, you know, the running, you know, phenomenon here. Now, what happened, you know, what was going on before, you know, Lucifer, you know, before 700,000 years ago? You know, we don't know. I mean, maybe there was lots and lots of rotation in this system before that. You know, who knows how many different system sovereigns we had before that.
But. How many worlds?
Okay, so it's moving towards 1,000, roughly 1,000, when they're fully built out. Okay, we have, does anyone remember? I won't say it. See if someone else remembers. Who remembers how many we have right now?
619.
Yeah, yeah. And how many did we have at the time of the rebellion? 607 at the time of the rebellion. 12 more have come on, you know, have become inhabited worlds since in the last 200,000 years. All right, so when we're talking about this, you know, you're dealing with roughly these beings are dealing with roughly 600 worlds. Now, they're dealing with those in different stages because you get the sense from other things they say that at least for us, it seems to be going in blocks of about 200 at a time. Because they tell you the next wave, you know, is about 200 in the next wave, you know, and none of those roughly 200 are even an inhabited world yet. Don't even have life implantation yet, you know, let alone being an inhabited world. You know, so they're, tens, you know, probably hundreds of millions of years away from being an inhabited world, that next group. I see. So there's this huge gap. See, so and the very fact that you had 12 reach inhabited status, you know, for the evolving animals, you know, reach human status, 12 in the last 200,000 years. I mean, that's like pretty rapid fire. See, so that you know that roughly 200 in our group. I mean, they're very tightly. They're all pretty much started at the same time and have a very similar. I mean, that's why the neighboring planet, you know, is so close to us developmentally. I mean, you know, like, you know, some ways almost exactly with us. I mean, at most maybe 200 years offset between our social development and stuff. I mean, they're very close to us. You know, you've got 400, you know, roughly 400 worlds, you know, that became inhabited worlds long, long, long time ago, you know, are now deep enlightened life. So, you know, what a planetary prince has to do with them, see, is much different than what he's doing with, you know, in our case, with this set of about 200 that we're in. You know, they're the only ones that are going to be feeding into the mansion worlds and, you know, those other worlds. I mean, they're going to be going straight to Salvington and stuff. You know, I mean, they've been settled in light and life for hundreds of millions of years, you know, if not a lot longer.
So he was the system sovereign of the 619 inhabited planets.
Yep.
Not all of the worlds were affected.
Yeah, who remembers how many planetary princes joined the Lucifer Rebellion?
30-some.
Anyone remember the 37? 37.
Eleanor of Penobscot.
Which, that was one of the 37.
No.
I think if you go and look at it, that's the way it words it. But anyway, yes, there was that, just, you know, that little batch. See, so now you could wonder why is that? You know, why so few? Well, again, you know, probably there's a number of worlds, you know, that were a lot further along than us. So much less, you know, chance of them going astray. You know, it would most likely be, you know, those that are just very close in timing to us. Yeah.
I mean, if it was all invisible, the normal little people wouldn't know anything about it anyway. You know, we wouldn't know what's happened.
Right. See, now there's an example. You know, you mentioned Penobscot, okay, and Eleonora. I mean, you know, remember what happened there. So the planetary prince joined the rebellion. But the mortals were, you know, totally up to speed with, you know, what's going on here. You know, and a mortal steps forward and takes the reins of the planet.
A female mortal.
And a female mortal at that.
Purposely. Please remember it was a female mortal.
Given a very Teutonic name, you might note.
You know, when that stops being a joke, we might have some equality here. Come on.
Okay, but again, remember, you know, I mean, it wasn't going to be a female world in this mortal on this world. Do like, remember, there's a difference. Remember, they tell you some worlds, you know, are a lot more definitively on the female side than, you know, than others. There's a lot of variation in that. Not all mortals, male and females, are the same. Okay, there's some variation in that regard, but yeah. So anyway, so you know, it bring all that, because you know you're gonna notice the very fact that you space things out like this, and then even within a group, you know, there's enough spread where if something goes astray, you know, the damage is going to be inherently limited just by the way the logistics of you know, making worlds, endowing life on worlds, you know, and fostering that, just the way that is logistically handled is going to mitigate these issues some. Right? So, you know, there's, you know, when you think about why on earth would they make the most susceptible ones, you know, rulers down at this level, isn't that completely irresponsible on their part? I'm just reminding you, it's not like they're completely irresponsible. They've stacked the deck quite a bit. You know, there's not going to be any sort of, you know, really large scale systemic thing happen, even, you know, within a system, you know, and it's not going to get out of a system, because instantly, you know, the Constellation Fathers clamp the system down. You know, that it can metastasize only to a limited extent. All right. Let's see here. Anything else in there? You know, that last line you were reading there, system governments do not suddenly change. So, you know, that gives you another little sense of why you don't just have one individual. It's to soften those transitions. You know, if you just have one, he's rotated out, and you get this totally different, you know, individual in there. You know, the moment, you know, if he does get, one gets rotated out of there, okay, his assistant is going to take over. So there's going to be some continuity, and then another individual will be assigned out of the reserves, and he's going to kind of strike step with that now new system sovereign. So the evolution, you know, from one the difference of one individual to another is going to be spread out, see, and softened over time. So you don't have these stark things like you see, you know, in some churches where they rotate pastors out, you know, and, you know, you find this church and you really like it, this, you know, you really like that pastor, you know, and 2 years later they rotate that pastor out and you've got someone who's just completely different, you know, and is not what you're looking for at all. See, they avoid that sort of thing by this technique, spreading it out. All right.
When system sovereigns or assistants are recalled, their places are filled by selections made by the Supreme Council, located on the Constellation headquarters, from the reserves of that order, a group which is larger on Edentia than the average indicated.
Ah, see, so there's the little tip of the hat to the logistics there. So these reserves are not all sitting there, you know, at Salvington. They've got them distributed out to the constellations. So they don't have so far to travel if they, you know, are called up. And, you know, and look at the wisdom in play that, you know, so you look back here. So system sovereigns and assistants, 600,000, right? How many systems are there?
10,000.
All systems. Right, so there's 100 constellations and 100 systems and constellations. See, so system sovereigns and assistants, okay. If you're going to, yeah, so you've got to, you know, you got 10,000 and you just got 600, so there's not a lot. And how, you know, they're going to divide that, they're going to sort of preposition them in the constellation. So now you've got the 100 thing that Gene was just bringing up. Yep. Okay. So of those 600,000, you know, if you think about just splitting it evenly into 100 batches, you know, you just have 6,000 in each constellation. Okay. So see, that's what they're referring to. You know, the average indicated, see, would be 6,000. That's the average indicated. So we have something more. And coincidentally, there was a rebellion in this constellation. But they weren't caught off guard because there were already plenty of prepositioned reserves in this constellation. So they know, see, that's telling you that they know you know, where things are looser and where things are tighter. You know, like we were just talking about, you know, they knew, you know, right back there, day one and on Melchizedek when they're going to school, you know, they know which Lenonindex, you know, are the ones that are constantly, you know, tugging at, you know, I want to go off over there, you know. They know which ones. Right.
Laniforge.
Right, and then, you know, then there's Laniforge. You know, remember who took over for Lucifer. You know, he has the distinction of being the only primary Lenonindex that has stayed loyal in the face of a rebellion directly impacting them. Yeah. So he's the singular loyal primary, you know, Lucifer goes off the rails as a primary, and was it difficult to get Satan to come along? No, I mean, yeah, right. So those primaries, they are, you know, they have issues too, but Laniforge, you know, they mentioned he's the singular primary that stayed loyal in the face of a rebellion. He was an assistant to a system sovereign that rebelled, and he said, no, I don't think so, and took over and held things together. All right, let's see here. Where were we? I lost our place here. Oh yeah, that right, the indenture thing, yeah. Okay, so yeah, keep going here.
The Supreme Lenonindex Councils are stationed on the various Constellation headquarters. Such a body is presided over by the senior most high associate of the Constellation Father, while the junior associate supervises the reserves of the secondary order.
Ah, see, there it is. We suspected that far-seeing ability of the Verandadex, you know, might be really helpful in prepositioning and, you know, and anticipating. See, right there it is. So So you have those two associates, remember, of the Constellation Father, and this is how their duties divide up. That the senior one, is working with the one group, and the junior is working with the other group, the primaries and secondaries. All right.
The system sovereign.
Oh, wait, you know what? I just thought of something. It occurred to me until I just transferred there. Remember what they said about the senior and the junior associates? When we were talking about the Veronidex and why there were three of them, that you have the constellation level, which is the associativity level, and that the how did they engage that associativity? You had the constellation father, the main one, is going to be directly engaging associativity. But remember the two associates, one is engaging unity, and the other is engaging individuality. Okay, and you see that again here, the one that's engaging the individuality more, the junior, is the one that's assigned, to the issues that are more down in the trenches of individuality, with the secondaries, in contrast to the primaries. So it's a consistent, division of duties here. Okay.
The system sovereigns are true to their names. Is that where we are?
Yep, that's where we were. Yep.
The system sovereigns are true to their names. They are well-nigh sovereign in the local affairs of the inhabited worlds. They are almost paternal in their direction of planetary princes, the material suns, and the ministering spirits. The personal grasp of the sovereign is all but complete. These rulers are not supervised by Trinity observers from the central universe. They are the executive division of the local universe, and as custodians of the enforcement of legislative mandates and as executives for the application of judicial verdicts, they present the one place in all universe administration where personal loyalty to the will of the personal disloyalty to the will of the Michael Sun could most easily and readily entrench itself and seek to assert itself.
See, our unity consciousness doesn't want to read disloyalty there. Just notice that, we're going to have an instinct to not want to see that word.
I did not see dis.
Yeah. Because this is that issue I was bringing up. You've got all the legislative and judicial issues coming to a focus point. And it's like, wow, I should make sure that point where the rubber meets the road is indelible, and will hold its point and it will write finely, forever. No. Those are the things that can get squishy. You have this inescapable fact that if you're going to have an evolutionary domain, a non-Havona domain, at some point it has to come down to that fundamental issue of free will and circumscribed nature. There's no way to, you can mitigate and whatnot, but when the rubber meets the road, finally, that's where that is. You're not going to have an evolutionary domain if both the leaders and the followers down at that lowest level aren't completely free to go astray. There won't be the full freedom required. So, our desire for someone to just, perfect, to have always been and to continue to be telling us what to do, that's not the Father's way. We have to just come to terms with that. The whole point is for you to be able to fall. The most straightforward way to actualize that potential is to not have rigid walls that you live in, where you just have no choice but to follow it to success. It's just not, it's not appropriate. in the spirit of acceptable there, you know, we read before, it's just not appropriate to the circumstances, see, to desire to imagine such a leadership. So that's the fifth epical revelation in a lot of ways, you know, trying to get us to come to terms with the fact that we live in an evolutionary domain and what that implies. You know, it's the inevitabilities, right? Is such and so desirable then? Yep, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just struck by they're making it very clear what the duties of an executive are.
Mm-hmm.
Enforcement of legislative mandates and the application of judicial verdicts. They're not to legislate, they're not to judge.
Right. Right. Yes.
To those limitations.
Right. They're not a king. And they're certainly not the God of liberty. Right. Right. As long as they keep one eye on their superiors who are sending down the legislation and the judicial, you know, edicts. Right. Everything will be fine as long as, you know, how did they word that? The legislative mandates and the judicial verdicts, you know, as long as they subordinate themselves to that, just faithfully execute what's being handed down to them, everything's going to be fine. But the moment they try to think for themselves, it's not going to go well. You know, and that, of course, is the way it's, you know, we the people of the United States. I mean, that's, you know, we are the first nation on this planet that has been guided in an effort to manifest the pattern on high here on earth, you know, to have an executive that is like that, not one that is going to speed up the process. I mean, remember, that's what Lucifer wanted to do. You know, it takes a long time to slog through everything and get to light and life. It's like, well, I can see it light and life. We could just rearrange it and make it light and life. Why go through the evolutionary process? And with planetary princes, you know, why do I have to sit here and foster, eons of the material comfort era, you know, on the mortals of my world, you know, tyranny and gluttony and, you know, and whatnot. Let's just go for the light and life thing. Oh, cool, and my system sovereign says that's acceptable, you know, so I'm going for it, right? My spiritual consciousness has been champing at the bit for eons, you know, to just skip all the falderall. It's like, no. this is, this is the whole point of this, as I've been stressing, that if you accept your times very matter-of-factly, if you aren't filled with all kinds of ideals, if you don't have much spiritual consciousness, then there's no danger. But the moment you start to think ahead of your time, you're playing right into this issue. The inability to recognize that every moment, you know, is divine. It's a divine dispensation. It's the Father's way. But it's not perfect. Perfection is not the Father's way. That's your false initial assumption. You're assuming that perfection is the Father's way. It's not. Not out here. It's the Father's way in Havona. It's not the Father's way out here. Perfection is not the Father's way. Perfecting is the Father's way. You know, and that's the fundamental issue.
This is a crazy analogy, but I just see this little wild animal and you put him in a cage, and when it can behave in that cage, you give him a bigger cage. And when he earns his behavior in that cage, he gets more freedom. Mm-hmm. And they take the brakes off, they make the form, we talk a lot about form, they make that form bigger, but you have to behave within that form before you're given a larger form. Mm-hmm. It's quite a juxtaposition of judgment and character as to when you're exercising freedom, which is the only gift you can give, is to be given freedom so that you can make a free choice. That's the only gift that's worth giving or getting. And yet you have to make that choice within a form that's very rigid, mm-hmm. mandates.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, so again, just, you know, before we leave that, you know, just again, like I was saying, you know, remind yourself of, you know, that's what we're attempting to do this as a nation. The same thing that's going on in every local system, in every local universe. You know, we're attempting to have an executive branch that puts itself in cooperative subordination to the people. Okay? You know, and as soon as we think, well, you know, it'd be a lot more efficient if we allowed an executive branch to just act on its own. To, you know, I mean, it's very, very messy to wait for the legislature of the people to finally come to wisdom. It'd be so much more efficient if we just, you know, put a wise king in place, you know, and let him just decree light and life. See, it's not the Father's way. You can be guaranteed that the moment you allow a president of the United States to do that, the Creative Mother Spirit is not going to uphold that anymore. She's going to withdraw her hand, and the system will crash, because that's not the pattern on high. You know, they're trying to teach us this. They're trying to get us to avoid this spiritual conscious instinct of wanting to skip time. The time is somehow evil. No, time is the Father's way. So it's very, very relevant, you know, these issues about the Lucifer Rebellion and the Adamic default. I mean, we all know that the thing they have in common is at the beginning. They started exactly the same way. Yeah, with impatience. Spiritual consciousness in and of itself has no concept of time. So the more spiritual the being, the less they innately are aware of time. You know, and they have to be reminded of time. You know, that evolution is creativity in time. So time is the Father's way. All right, so as soon as we get impatient, we're going to fail as a nation. We have to stay patient. We have to trust the Father's way. You know, and it's a very long and circuitous path. But is its destiny not certain? Is the process not finite and the Father not absolute? The destiny is certain. Just trust. I mean, especially for us, I mean, we're so here today and gone tomorrow. I mean, it's a little more difficult for, you know, if you're an eternal being like a Lananandek, okay, you know, after, you know, several hundred billion years, you know, it can be hard to be patient, but 80 years? I mean, certainly we can be patient for 80 years, can't we? We're here today and gone tomorrow. All right.
Our local universe has been unfortunate in that over 700 sons of the Lananandek order have rebelled against the universe government, thus precipitating confusion in several systems and on numerous planets. Of this entire number of failures, only three were system sovereigns. Practically all of these sons belong to the second and third orders, planetary princes, and tertiary Lananandeks.
Just the one little thing there is just, you know, I mentioned this earlier, you know, don't forget that you know, the common thing is going to be a single planetary prince rebelling, not the system sovereign. See, like they're reminding you there. I mean, you know, you've just had three system rebellions and you have over 700, you know, Lindonidex. It's like, well, okay, there's going to be, you know, it wasn't just Lucifer and ours. I mean, there were several other Lindonidex, you know, that got carried along for the ride, but, you know, but still, you know, 700, okay, that's a lot. So the thing is, you know, most of the time it's more likely that a secondary is going, or a tertiary is going to rebel than a primary. The primaries are a little more integralist. That's why they're primaries. Right. So again, you know, they don't put tertiary in the non-index in charge of local systems. You know, the deck is stacked to a degree towards integrity. Right. They didn't make me a system sovereign. Yeah, you know, that would be very unwise. Okay.
The large number of these sons who have lapsed from integrity does not indicate any fault in creatorship. They could have been made divinely perfect, but they were so created that they might better understand and draw near to the evolutionary creatures dwelling on the worlds of time and space.
See, they know we have issues here. They keep kind of talking about it in different ways. You know, this is tough for us.
Of all the local universes in Irvantan, our universe has, with the exception of Hensalon, lost the largest number of this order of suns. On Uversa, it is the consensus that we have had so much administrative trouble in Nebadon because our sons of the Lenonidec order have been created with such a large degree of personal liberty in choosing and planning. I do not make this observation by way of criticism. The creator of our universe has full authority and power to do this. It is the contention of our high rulers that, while such free-choosing sons make excessive trouble in the earlier ages of the universe, when things are fully sifted and finally settled, the gains of higher loyalty and fuller volitional service on the part of these thoroughly tested sons will far more than compensate for the confusion and tribulations of earlier times.
Okay, now, you know, if you're not penetrating beyond the words, you know, there's a bit of rose-colored glasses there. You know, let's just take them off. I mean, they make excessive trouble in the earlier times. You know, okay, technically, what do we mean there? It means lots and lots of beings go into iniquity and cease to exist, period, in eternity. Okay, quote-unquote excessive trouble, you know. We're talking about literal, you know, cosmic death, you know, sometimes in sweeping scales. So, you know, we've often pointed this out. It's hard for us to think objectively even about our mortal death, let alone our immortal death, you know, quote unquote, you know, our real death. You know, for them to think, well, you know, it sloshes around and, you know, and several, you know, quintillion beings, you know, cease to exist. But, you know, in the long term, it all, you know, comes out on the positive side. You know, it's hard for us to, you know, to think about it like that, you know, that, but they're very, they're very factual, I guess maybe say it that way, about this issue. You know, it's like I've pointed out, you know, when you go and you read the Lucifer Rebellion and that, you know, they come up and say, Gabriel, Gabriel, why aren't you standing forth, you know, and, you know, countering what Lucifer's preaching, you know, on the hilltop, you know, and basically he says, well, we're not interested in beings who aren't sophistry proof because they're not real. It's better you get the unreal ones, you know, out of the way. See, that's pretty like, whoa, that's kind of cold, isn't it? Don't you care about all this? Like, No, see, it's just, it doesn't matter if he cares. The facts are the facts. Nothing that Gabriel does gets you to paradise, gets you to eternity. It's 100% you, period. You know, and one way or another, you have to face that fact and choose yes or no. You know, there's no one is not given the requisite mercy that they need to get to that threshold choice point. But if you're very definitive about it, they don't need to dole out much mercy to you. You're taking a beeline to oblivion, and you know they can save those that mercy for someone else. They're not going to, you know, take. I'm going to take Pam's mercy and give it to Nick because Nick is, you know, needs it more. No, Nick has all that, you know, Nick needs, and if Nick wants to go to oblivion, that's his choice. You know, so you know that, you know, they think about this very, you know, from our perspective, coldly like that. You know, resistance is futile. Death is irrelevant. It strikes us, you know, as this machine-like, Borg-like coldness, you know, when you think about it. But it's just the facts.
But on the other side, it's the potential and the opportunity.
I mean, to get to eternity is trivial. All you have to do is say yes. That's fine. I mean, you know, you'll get there. I mean, it's not like, you know, but you have to really say yes, that no matter what happens to me, I'm just going to keep chugging along and I'm going to get to eternity. But the moment that you put yourself before anything, you know, the work is important, the self is not, you know, that's why they behave like this, because the self is not important. It's like, you know, you're going, what do you mean, you know, Gabriel, how can you respond like that? You know, he would have said, remember, the self is not important.
It feels to me like we've been given a mandate to get the world to lighten life with this revelation.
No, the planetary administrators get the world to lighten life, not us.
Well, I tried to say that in one sentence. But it seems to me that now it's not just about us. It's not just about me getting to paradise. It's about me doing my part to get Michael's world and Michael's universe to lighten life. And that's what this revelation is.
But that's a long process. Remember, I mean, you know, just take a moment and, you know, I can flip there really quickly.
Baby steps.
Right now, we're basically, you know, if you're, what paper is this? Paper 50, you know, in section 5 about progressive civilization. You know, we've basically, you know, by and large, if at least the leading edge of mankind has made it through the nutrition epoch, the security age, and we're in the material comfort era. Okay, and you'd like to do your part to get us to lighten life. Well, step one is to make sure you foster the fullness of the material comfort era. We've got to complete the material comfort era first. So have you done your part to ensure that, you know, gluttony is getting its full expression, tyranny is getting its full expression? We've got to, until we've totally worked through that, you can't go to the next step. Then the next step is the quest for knowledge and wisdom. Oh. That sounds a lot like something that the fifth epical revelation might be directly encouraging. And then the step after that is the epic of philosophy and brotherhood. Ah, also with the fifth epical revelation in the even higher sense, you know, is bringing forward.
What page and section?
Paper 50, section 5. Single column, it starts on 576, goes to 577. And then after that is the age of spiritual striving. And then after that is the year of light and life. Okay? So, see, again, our spiritual consciousness wants to foster light and life because it has no notion of time. It has no notion of the tens and hundreds of thousands of years that that process I just described, you know, normally takes. This is the thing. I mean, the problem with Lucifer and Caligastia is they were working for towards light and life. Instead of, they were in a nutrition epoch and they should have been working on the security age. But instead they were working on light and life.
I'm working on the gluttony part. Yeah. I'm not trying to leap over any of these. I'm just looking, I'm far seeing, see.
I know, but it just, you brought it up, so I'm picking on you.
I see.
Okay,
it.
Okay, don't take it personally. But just you know, I just want to make sure. You know, I mean, I keep drilling this home. I mean, this is the tension.
I've only been listening to you say this for 20 years.
I know. Your spiritual consciousness doesn't work on. It doesn't want to work on the quest for knowledge and wisdom. Okay. See, you know, your individuality consciousness brought into relationship with your unity consciousness. So you have the knowledge with your individuality consciousness and you get some first super additive that gets you going up to wisdom. And then upon that new foundation, you can begin to work on philosophy. Actually bringing science and religion together into a super additive consequence, and so that there can begin to be kindred minds. And then and only then can you begin to think about brotherhood. Okay. And kindred minds are so beyond kindred spirits, that using the same adjective, blurs the difference. To have a world of personal living philosophies that can, so that they're kindred minds and can have the brotherhood of man is so beyond the consciousness of the most brilliant people that have ever lived in the entire history of this planet that it's not even funny. I mean, that's what we're kind of starting to learn as we're going through reawakening philosophy. Okay, I mean, the most brilliant people alive who've ever lived trying to reflect haven't even begun to scratch the surface of what has to happen before you can even have the brotherhood of man. And then only when you have that do you go to the age of spiritual striving. And then there's some huge, long slog of the age of spiritual striving. And then finally, there's light at the end of the tunnel, the first stage of light and life, followed by the second stage and the third stage and the fourth.
Why is the fifth ethical revelation here?
It's here, foreshadowing those next stages. Like I said, there's the potential for a subset of individuals to begin to move out of the material comfort era today. And they need some guidance to begin to get the process going into knowledge and wisdom, looking, motivated by what lies after that. So you do the knowledge and wisdom with great enthusiasm and stick-to-itness, because beyond that you see the gleaming light of philosophy and brotherhood. So if you don't see, the radiant triunity light of philosophy off in the distance, there's no way to do the knowledge and wisdom. See, these are the sorts of, so that's why this is a philosophic text. And if you take a hold of the origin and the history, you can use this to get a hold of the destiny of philosophy. This is a philosophic text, even about God. It's not a religious text. It doesn't talk, the purpose is not to uplift your recognition of the ideals of God. It's not a religious text. first paragraph all the way to the last sentence. Like I've said over and over, it's about the idea of God. It's about establishing that far-seeing recognition. We don't have enough far-seeing recognition to even remotely see the age of spiritual striving, let alone the year of light and life. Those are words that you cannot consciousize. If you think you can see the age of light and life, you're delusional. You don't have, none of us in this room even have the remotest notion of what that means. Okay? Remember what they told you? You can't even imagine a post-bestowal sun age. That's beyond your wildest ability to imagine. Okay? And that's you know, that's trivially irrelevant compared to age of light and life. Okay? So they're trying to get us to be humble about this. You can't know light and life. So don't try to strive for it. You will invariably take mankind in the opposite direction because you can't see that. You can't guide mankind to light and life. You'll have to transcend the most brilliant humans that have ever lived to see philosophy, to see step five. Okay? And then be an agent for moving us into stage four. You cannot see six and seven. Okay. So, see, that's what, you know, I've been trying to get people to recognize, you know, that's something that you couldn't know until the fifth epical revelation. It's now right there, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 laid out so that you can, oh, okay. That's what I'm supposed to be trying to be able to see. We've got people that are way back in one, you know, we got those that are working on two. The leading edge is basically in three.
Have a little donut.
You know, but remember, they told you you're quivering on the very brink. You know, you're quivering on the very brink of some of you moving to four, but you're quivering.
Okay, but I'm not talking about each individual. I'm talking about the whole planet.
Right, the whole planet. The leading edge of the planet is in three. Yeah, and everyone with any spiritual consciousness knows it because they're constantly railing about how materialistic, you know, mankind is. It's like, well, that's the Father's way right now. Okay, it's the material comfort era. If they weren't materialistic, they would be in defiance of God. To not be materialistic now is to not be following the Father's way. That's what the Father wants right now. It's His way. It's step three in the Father's way.
For the whole, not for the
end. For the whole. See, this is the tricky thing about your spiritual consciousness, is keeping the individual and the whole separate. You know, we've talked about this. I mean, right? That's the problem that Lucifer had. He was, you know, he was blurring the lines between, as an individual, I can be, you know, making great. I mean, did Jesus limit himself to the nutrition epic? No, he went all the way to individual light and life. Right. Would have fused with his adjuster if he hadn't been on a bestowal mission. Okay, but in terms of working for the world, when you get that thought in your head, okay, you have to distinguish between yourself and the world. Okay. You know, if you go out some places on this planet, if you're working to foster the security age for them when you should be working to help them complete the nutrition epic, you are in defiance of the Father's way. You're technically in rebellion. And you're an abomination, the book says, to the Lord. Okay? Can you limit your outer life activity to what's appropriate to the people? If they need nutrition epic, just work on that. Don't start throwing in more advanced stuff. See, that's what, you know, that's the problem that all missionaries, you know, that's what they get stuck in. You know, they're working with people that are trying to get them to the fullness of the nutrition epic. And they're throwing in all sorts of things that are completely inappropriate. And they completely rip that society apart with that information. And then the society's got nothing. They don't even have the initial stages of the nutrition epic. They got to start from scratch again because you were enlightened and you wanted to enlighten them. So, you know, these are the hard facts that we have to come to terms with. I know that I don't remotely know what the words light and life mean. I cannot know that. So I just set that aside. It's unknowable to me what those words mean, what that's going to be like. I can't imagine it. So, but I could imagine having more philosophic integrity than anyone that's ever called themselves a philosopher and who are 10 times smarter than me. I've already discovered I can do that. I can do that because the fifth epical revelation allows it. I can solve every quandary that they've ever had. And now I can start to move towards that. I can see that, and I can foster being a phenomenon that will encourage others to strike step with that. Okay? An attainable goal. Something I can know, something I can see. All right, let's see here. Does anyone remember where we were?
Paper 55.
Well, no, 35. We're on paper 35. I know that much. Let's see. Where were we in section 9 there? Let's see.
9.
Just turn the page.
9.
You have to be in the
event.
In the event.
Okay.
In the event of rebellion on a system headquarters, a new sovereign is usually installed within a comparatively short time, but not so on the individual planets. They are the component units of the material creation, and creature free will is a factor in the final adjudication of all such problems. Successor planetary princes are designated for isolated worlds, planets whose princes of authority may have gone astray, but they do not assume active rulership of such worlds until the results of insurrection are partially overcome and removed by the remedial measures adopted by the Melchizedeks and other ministering personalities. Rebellion by a planetary prince instantly isolates his planet. The local spiritual circuits are immediately severed. Only a bestowal sun can reestablish interplanetary lines of communication on such a spiritually isolated world.
See the example they gave? See, it's not a system rebellion. See, it's a planetary rebellion. See, so that, you know, that's what you would more commonly expect. And you would just have that planet isolated in the system circuits. But, you know, we not only had our planet isolated in the system circuits, we have our system isolated in the constellation circuits. So even if you, you know, opened up our connection to the system, you know, it's, you know, not really what the planetary administrators are looking for, because they're still cut off from the rest of the constellation and everything outside of that. Okay, now this whole issue about a bestowal sun, you know, only a bestowal sun can reestablish interplanetary lines of communication. Okay, Michael came here as a bestowal sun. But, like I was saying, I mean, you know, we're part of a system clampdown, not just a world. But, very curious little exception came into play, right? The dispensational resurrection following, you know, Jesus' resurrection was the first time what operated?
Archangels.
The archangel circuit. Yeah. So there is a circuit, you know, that was reestablished, and that's, you know, that's the archangel circuits, you know, so that's fully connected outside of the constellation and everything, okay, let alone the system. But that's a very high spiritual circuit. Remember, the archangels are the highest spirit beings of any, you know, significant number, you know, and that circuit, in order to plug into it, to use it, I mean, you got to be a very high being. Midwayers, it's above their reach. They can't, you know, that's why they couldn't use that for getting the fifth epical revelation, because that's too high a circuit. They can't associate it with it. It's too spiritual. It's too unity-like, not individuality enough like them that they can engage. But, see, you know, there was this interesting little way that that came to pass here with the archangel circuit. So in spite of the system clampdown, our world did get, to a degree, connected in. You know, it's kind of just for, yeah, by and large, the planet is, you remember what they were saying about the whole reflectivity mechanism and stuff, you know, it doesn't fully operate here because of the circuits and all, you know, so, you know, there's this kind of little exception that is for an elect few in the universe that can use the archangel circuit, but by and large, everyone else is, you know, doesn't benefit from that being here at all.
Well, what about the spirit of truth?
Right, and again, that that's not limited by circuit because it's fully her, you know, the Creative Mother Spirit that's ministering that, and so
the bestowal son has to come to give.
Yeah, yeah. See, so yeah, see, the bestowal son can bestow. You know, like if you imagined way down the road getting a bestowal son on the neighboring planet, you know, they haven't had a magisterial son yet, but you know, imagine going way down the road and the circuits were still closed. You know, they could get the spirit of truth on that planet, even though the circuits were still closed. You know, again, it's not just because he was Michael, you know, they could still get the spirit of truth. All right.
There exists a plan for saving these wayward and unwise sons. And many have availed themselves of this merciful provision, but never again may they function in those positions wherein they defaulted. After rehabilitation, they are assigned to custodial duties and to departments of physical administration.
That's the line that you always hear me joke about, you know, that they're put on KP duty.
Yeah. What do they mean by physical administration?
There's
literal physical labor.
Well, no, I mean, you know, all of like I was mentioning that junior associate constellation father, for instance, is directly overseeing physical administration issues. There's all kinds of issues that we can't imagine about establishing harmony in the physical aspect of the universe of universes. You have a three-pronged effort that starts out kind of separate. You've got those that are really working on fostering the spirit system, those that are fostering the mind system, those that are fostering the physical system. And then as time goes by, more and more they have to work that together, you know, instead of separately as a, you know, very separate threefold actuality, it has to be more and more coordinated into a triunity. See, so that's why you can appreciate why they would be worried about all kinds of details we can't even understand about the balance and proportion and, you know, symmetry of the physical system, because you're moving everything towards a power personality synthesis where for you to achieve completeness in the grand universe, be able to eventually be a seventh-stage spirit, every automaton has to, you know, all of those ducks have to be put in a, you know, in line too. I mean, the entire physical system has to come into perfect synchrony with every being. You know, all those absolute unique personalities, well, every identical automaton has to be put into arrangement where it's in perfect synchrony with a countless number of absolutely unique personalities. Think about how micromanaged and precise that, you know, pattern has to be to sync up with that complex, absolutely unique set of persons. But if you're going to get the Supreme to come together and all of us with him, that's what has to happen. So, you know, we'll start to learn about these things as we go forward, what they mean by physical administration, but that's, you know, more precisely, but that's, you know, it's just as important to have, you know, to have that part of the process perfecting as it is for what's between my ears to be perfecting. Okay. And the more I go on, the more I will need that physical part to have been taken forward for me to be able to go forward. I become more and more dependent upon that. You know, right now you can stick me about anywhere, you know, and I can do what I need to do. I'm not so dependent on my physical environment. That becomes less and less true as you go forward. If the physical environment hasn't been brought together, you can't progress. You're not so independent. Okay. But, you know, they don't, kind of back to the media thing there, though, these Lenonidex, that the wayward and unwise ones, the ones that went astray, you know, we don't know how many out of that, what did they say? Did they say, they said more than 700, didn't they? Yeah, over 700. We don't know kind of what the ratio is, but the percentage is, but anyway. All right, let's finish it up here.
Well, do you want me to go with the Lenonidic worlds?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
The third group of seven worlds in the Salvington circuit of 70 planets with their respective 42 satellites constitute the Lenonidic cluster of administrative spheres. On these realms, the experienced Lenonidics belonging to the X-system sovereign core officiate as administrative teachers of the ascending pilgrims and the seraphic hosts. The evolutionary mortals observe the system administrators at work on the system capitals, but here they participate in the actual coordination of the administrative pronouncements of the 10,000 local systems.
Okay, so, you know, just like we've seen before, you know, as we go up, we start to actually directly, are directly entrusted with these activities. And we're at eye level with these various happenings. You know, and there's kind of in passing the answer to the question is like, well, if a system sovereign gets totally rotated out, you know, then where does he go? See, so here they're pointing out they've become part of a teaching corps because of their vast experience. You know, that's what I'm saying. The Constellation Fathers could have been thinking that it's like, oh man, you know, after a couple million years of Lucifer, you know, staying at the helm here, he is going to be the most fantastic, you know, teacher up there. You know, it's happening. You know, they could have been looking towards that because he had all of this, you know, greater in natural liberty of personality expression. He had this immense creativity that he so naturally manifested. you know, see, and again, that's, you know, that related to when we're talking about, you know, the rubber meets the road. I mean, do you want to be able to manifest creativity? Then you have to be given the liberty to manifest creativity. But that means you also, if you're going to have creativity ability, that means you also have destructivity ability. Remember when they point out that, you know, the two go hand in hand. So the more creative liberty you have, the more destructive liberty you have. Okay, all right.
These administrative schools of the local universe are supervised by a corps of Lenonidic sons who have had long experience as system sovereigns and as constellation counselors. These executive colleges are excelled only by the administrative schools of ENSA.
Okay, so just so waiting for that. So again, we've got, remember, we're just going around the 70 worlds and that string of pearls around Salvington. We have the first seven primaries for the Melchizedeks, the next seven for the Bronidex. Now we're on the third seven for the Lenonidex. We're working our way around the Melchizedek University. We're focusing on administrative education here. And why does it say these executive colleges are excelled only by the administrative schools of ENSA? ENSA's which level? No. That's Edentia. The minor sector is ENSA.
Okay.
So in the super universe, the three levels, That's individuality again, see? Right? So, you know, so you're dealing with individuality at the local universe level compared to individuality at the super universe level. Obviously, individuality at the super universe level is going to exceed the the relatively circumscribed nature of a local universe. So that's why, you know, it's excelled only by the administrative schools of ANSA. So see there, you know, again, just, you know, you can, if you hadn't figured it out, it's like, oh, wait a minute, I hadn't thought about that. There's three levels in each. I bet it's individuality, associativity, unity. Individuality, associativity, unity. See, there's all these clues all over in the book like this to get you to link them together like that. Anything else in there? No, I guess not. Let's go.
While serving as training spheres for ascending mortals, the Lanonadec worlds are the centers for extensive undertakings having to do with the normal and routine administrative operations of the universe. All the way into paradise, the ascending pilgrims pursue their studies in the practical schools of applied knowledge, actual training in really doing the things they are being taught. The universe educational system sponsored by the Melchizedeks is practical, progressive, meaningful, and experiential. It embraces training in things material, intellectual, moral, and spiritual.
So, you know, just to, you can spend some time reflecting on those two lists of four there and the parallel. Practical, material, progressive, intellectual, etc. There, seeing the meeting there of putting those in parallel. But just, you know, quickly, since we dwelled on it, that physical administration issue up there at the end of the last section. You know, that whole issue of the material domain, that's directly tied to the practical. Do you want to be able to have a practical education? That comes directly into relationship with the material domain then.
Trade
so
school.
Someone better be overseeing the material domain if I'm going to be putting myself into relationship with it, hoping to get a practical experience. If I put myself into relationship with chaos, will I get that? No. Okay. So, all right, so the whole, it's a whole cosmic system. Everything has to be ordered.
It is in connection with these administrative spheres of the Lananondics that most of the salvaged sons of that order serve as custodians and directors of planetary affairs. And these defaulting planetary princes and their associates in rebellion, who choose to accept the proffered rehabilitation, will continue to serve in these routine capacities, at least until the universe of Nebadon is settled in light and life.
Okay, not only are they on KP duty, but they're on KP duty until the local universe is settled in light and life. However, you know, you go, okay, Chris, you're being a little flippant. It's maybe not quite KP duty. But the contrast here, you know, they describe it as routine, you know, affairs here, in these routine capacities. But, you know, think about it. So these spheres of Lananadex, you know, if you were put forward as the director of planetary affairs for one of those vast, elaborate architectural worlds, that seems like a pretty high responsibility. See, so yeah, they're pointing out it's, you know, they're capable of handling all kinds of technical administrative affairs with great precision and to do it well. It's trickier, though, to go way down in the trenches, see, and deal with the facts of evolution. See, up there you don't have to deal with the facts of evolution. You can let your desire for perfection just out there and go for it. You wanna graduate perfect students from your classes on your world. You know, perfectly educated in that particular issue. Okay. So, like I said, the problem is, is taking that spiritual consciousness down and allowing the nutrition epic, you know, to be innately divine. You know, to allow countless mass exterminations of people and, you know, and all sorts of very, you know, lowly things going around you all the time. You know, ethnic cleansing is the norm. You know, and it's the Father's way in those early stages. I mean, the Darwinism, quote unquote, you know, of those ages, the survival of the fittest. I mean, that's how you produce a group of beings that can get to light in life. They have to be purged of all, you know, the negative elements through these harsh methods. That's why I can't comprehend light and life, because I am too debased. My genetics is not even remotely capable of conscious, you know, of having a mind seated on it that can consciousize light and life. I'm way too limited genetically. I mean, I've got back mating up the wazoo. There's no way I can consciousize light and life. You know, especially, you know, if I'm from Europe, where there was a lot of back mating in Europe amongst the Neanderthals, amongst those Andonites, you know, that feeds right into my, you know, what kind of a mind conceit on me. Yeah, so that's just the way it is. All right.
Many of the Lanonandek sons in the older systems, however, have established wonderful records of service, administration, and spiritual achievement. They are a noble, faithful, and loyal group, notwithstanding that their tendency to fall into error through fallacies of personal liberty and fictions of self-determination. Sponsored by the chief archangels, acting by authority of Gabriel of Salvington.
Okay, so just two little things. I mean, when all is said and done, what does he say? You know, you notice he reminds you of the bottom line at the end. Fallacies of personal liberty and fictions of self-determination. So that's our weak point. Just as it was, just as it's Lanonadec's Achilles heel, that's ours. We're not that different. So be on the guard for fallacies of personal liberty and fictions of self-determination. Okay, and then I told you we were coming on this. You know, I told you at the end of this paper, you know that the chief of archangels, because it says it directly here, is actually one of the 12 that's in this second revelatory commission, you know, because he's acting by the authority of Gabriel, okay, i.e. he's one of the 12. So the chief of archangels wasn't just, you know, called to do this paper by the 12. He's one of the 12. You know, so like I said, you can, as you're going through this, you can try to figure out which ones of the authors are actually one of the 12 and which ones have been, you know, called in by the 12 to do a paper. Yeah. All right. So then next time we will go on to the next group of Sons of Life Carriers, and it starts out with a very fun loose end that we left behind when we were talking about the architects of the Master Universe. So tune in next time. Let's take a moment here.